Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
And he said, I'm rolling with Keith.
The Dan Bernstein Show. Weekdays 9 a.m. to noon on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
We spent the first hour of the show talking a lot about baseball and baseball's plans to return, but the NBA is soldiering on as well and doing it a little bit differently, cutting down on travel, but instead heading to a hotspot to sequester themselves there. Here to talk about it is Keith Smith of Yahoo Sports and a Real GM. He is on Twitter at Keith Smith NBA, and he is on the Alpamonte Ford hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. Keith, how you been?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me back.
Of course. So where are we now? It's just this is an incredible mix of confidence that's lined with trepidation that there seems to be at every turn and awareness as we've seen what's going on in and around Orlando and in and around that county of the increased risks that the NBA perhaps did not foresee.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Walt Disney World spans a couple of different counties. That's how big the property is. Orange and Osceola counties is in southwest Orange County and northwest Osceola County. And then there's a couple other counties. We call it the Four Corners area because they all come together called Polk and Lake. And all four of the counties were doing pretty good for the vast majority of the planning time that they were putting this plan together and all that. We've been very fortunate. And really over the last, let's call it 2.5 weeks, things have just really spiraled out of control. We haven't had a day in most of those counties under 10% positive test rate in quite some time. And that's very worrisome, not so much for the NBA players because they're not going to be out and about. They're going to be in their hotels and at the basketball facilities. But for the Walt Disney World employees who are going to be coming and going and taking care of them, that's where the concern really lies.
Well, and this is why I'm wondering what Disney is beholden to do at this point, because they went in full bore with the relationship with ESPN and the league. And Disney independently as a corporation is obviously well-funded and powerful and resourceful. What should they do? And I don't know what they're promising the NBA they can do, but how is it changing their practices for their own workers and the standards and the testing, the temperature taking, whatever they might be doing? There's a lot in their power to try to continue to make this as safe as possible. I imagine a lot of this just got a whole lot more expensive for them.
Yeah, to an extent, there is no plans as of, you know, today at, 11 o'clock my time here on the East Coast that Disney is going to test their cast that are taking care of the NBA. The challenge comes in when you think about Walt Disney World. There's roughly 80,000 people who work for Walt Disney World. It's massive, the largest single site employer in the entire United States. So what happens there is it's very hard because the vast majority of those casts are unionized to take in a union environment and say, we're going to test this subset of folks, but nobody else. And that becomes a challenge where it's, hey, wait a minute, we're working with guests every day in the hotels that have already reopened. The theme parks are scheduled still to reopen in the middle of July. You know, why would we not also get tested? And that becomes a pretty big challenge to figure out there. Now, what Disney is going to do is they have pretty rigorous not testing, but temperature checks and symptom checks and all these protocols around gloves and masks And then there are specific ones with the NBA. They'll never be really near the NBA players other than maybe when they're serving food. And that's not really any different than, you know, it would be just in regular life if they're picking up takeout or getting something delivered to the house. They're looking at that as even safer. So that's, I think, where the confidence comes in of, hey, this is safer than necessarily, you know, maybe being at home, because you're not even having to go out to the grocery store here. Where the people who are bringing your food, we've already done their temperature check. We've done all those things. But that, you know, safer is safer or safe enough is the way I've been kind of trying to wrap my head around it.
And it seems like there's been an open discussion about what the title would mean this year, about what this ring would mean. And I love the quote, Cubs manager David Ross, when he's talking about a 60-game season, he put it very simply. He said, if they're giving out a trophy at the end of this year, I want it. But basketball has always been different, Keith, and the players and the nature of having won a ring, of being somebody who can say they've won a title, it has mattered more in the culture, the players' culture of the NBA. And to hear, you know, Giannis Antetokounmpo talk about it, to hear them say it, you know, we always hear that word about asterisk, but it sounds like the players want this to be considered as legitimate as possible.
Yeah, they absolutely do, as does the NBA, as do their coaches. One of the teams I cover specifically is the Boston Celtics, and we did the media availability, and Brad Stevens, the Celtics head coach, said this is going to be one of the tougher championships to win, because everybody's kind of restarting their season almost, and there's no home games, and all of your normal NBA routines are all disrupted, and it's only the best of the best that are there, and those types of things. And I think that's what the players are picking up on too, is, you know, hey, don't discount this. Now, everybody's kind of treating it with the caveat of, if one of the title favorites gets wiped out because, you know, half their roster gets sick with coronavirus, then now you start to say, well, was this a real thing? But as long as everybody is, you know, relatively healthy and they get to the finals, then I think you're going to be looking at it and saying, hey, this was as much a real championship as any because of everything you went through to get here.
And that's what I wonder about, the tolerance for attrition. And we saw that in the MLS, I believe it was the Dallas team that's in a similar bubble down there, had four players test positive. You can keep filling the uniforms. You can go call up your G Leaguers or do whatever you can do. At some point, you can have guys who say they are the Boston Celtics or the Toronto Raptors or the Philadelphia 76ers, but everybody knows it's not an adequate, reasonable representation, especially in basketball, when there's the outsized meaning of each one individual player. What do you think that tolerance is going to be? And at what point would a team have to withdraw? At what point does a schedule change that then does erode apparent legitimacy?
Yeah, that's a great question. And unfortunately, we don't have a clear answer to that. It's been asked repeatedly to Adam Silver of, you know, is there a number? And he never really says that there's an actual number. And I think that's purposeful. I think that's also intelligent, because if you say yes, you know, at a 50, you know, positive test, we have to call it. Well, all everybody's going to do that is start a tally of, all right, that's, you know, 5. Now we're at 10, and keep tracking towards that without any of the real context involved. So I think that's one of your challenges there. Now, on the flip side of it, you know, I think as you look through with it, is we do know that there is a number where they'll shut it down. We just don't know what that number is. And that's, you know, again, we're just going to have to watch, and they're being hopeful that we never have to know that number, because it never gets that bad.
Something we've been discussing today is the awareness among players of the competitive advantage of intelligent behaviors and practices. And it may be easier when they're in a controlled environment rather than in their own homes and on airplanes, in airports, etc. But we've heard guys and baseball players talk about they have to commit to each other to not violate some of this stuff. And you know somebody's going to. You know guys are going to sneak out. You know that they're going to be trying to bring girlfriends in or whatever they might be trying to do. But do you think there needs to be that sort of internal peer pressure about, yeah, if we're going to win, if we're going to commit to each other, we also have to commit to best health practices, because it's the same as a competitive advantage?
Yeah, no, absolutely. If you're not in this together, you're not going to be there. And again, to go back to something Brad Stevens said, which I thought was really kind of hit the point, was, the team that goes the furthest in this may not necessarily be the, you know, most talented team. It'll be the team that, you know, finds the joy in being together. It has the most grit, has the most resolve to see this through and see that. I mean, you know, so that's going to be really important. And then I think Jared Dudley of the LA Lakers, and this is going back, well, probably close to a month ago now, when he said, you know, you don't want to be the 12th, 13th man on the team who messes up LeBron's chance for the title because you couldn't stay in your hotel room that night. And he said that's going to be something that everybody needs to be consciously thinking about. And they think, because it goes back to kind of what we were talking about before, how important, you know, one player can be to an NBA team and how important a superstar is, maybe more in the NBA than any other sport, that those superstars have a lot of weight, and they their words carry a lot of weight. So what happens is these guys don't want to let them down. And that, I don't think you're going to see it be too big of an issue, because I think these guys are going to constantly have that in the back of their mind of, boy, this might be LeBron's last chance at a ring, maybe, and I don't want to be the one who blows it for him. Or, you know, if it's, you know, Giannis's first chance at a ring, I don't want to be the one who blows that for him. And that's going to be, I think, the mindset the vast majority of the players are going to have.
That's fascinating to think of it in that context as well. And getting back to what Brad Stevens said about how it may not be the team that just on paper has the most talent, but the team that finds the joy in this. I guess then there's the balance, right? That it's when you start saying you find the joy, that also means you get relaxed a little bit, and maybe you let your guard down a little bit. And maybe it's, you know, it's sort of that fine line between the joy of playing the game and the intensity of playing the game, and, you know, actually factoring in the respect for the legitimacy of this title underpinning all of it as you go. Is this real? What's happening around me? How are we all looking at this? And still making sure that there's so much discipline. That is asking a lot of NBA coaches right now. And I would say Stevens probably on the short list of those respected enough to find a way to do it. Who else do you think? What other coaches do you think will do the best job in taking the team's figurative temperature?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think Doc Rivers will be high on that list. He's a, you know, highly respected by his players, by anybody who's ever really worked with him, played for him. Is, you know, they love him and they trust him and believe in him. I think Eric Spoelstra in Miami, because of his background, he has a lot of say. I think Mike Malone for the Nuggets, he runs kind of a more rigid shift there than most do, and I think the players have bought into that. And I think that's going to be, you know, the focus there. And the other challenges, which gets a little bit overlooked here, is the head coach has, you know, the most visible responsibility. But on these NBA teams, they're all their own little ecosystem. They have, you know, so many coaches, and each coach is assigned to a player or players and vice versa, and they work together very closely. Well, in this environment, because you're limited, you're not bringing your entire coaching staff. You're not bringing your player development people. You're not bringing your video guys. And it's going to be tough on some of the players who, wait, I always shoot with, you know, person X. They're my rebounder. They're the one who gets me the ball. They're the one who gets me through my warm-up. Those are the things that these teams are working through and thinking through right now before they get to Florida, and then we're working on in the 3 weeks when they're here, because the travel parties are so much smaller than they usually are.
We're talking with Keith Smith of Yahoo Sports and Real GM. You follow him on Twitter at Keith Smith NBA. On a completely separate channel right now, or maybe not so separate, is the players' commitment to continuing to be socially and politically active, aware, and extremely vocal. And they've talked about it as a group, and they don't want to let go of the rope on this, of what appears to be a societal inflection point. They understand their significance. They understand their ability to amplify messages of equality and inclusion and anti-racism, and they're planning to do it. What is this going to feel like? What is it? How are the two? How are the three? The competing for a championship, uncertainty about health, and what appears to be an ongoing progressive movement. How is it going to play out?
Yeah, that's going to be one of the more interesting things to watch of this, because it's, in a lot of ways, it's kind of an experiment that we've never seen before. And I think what's really interesting is talking to players and coaches that everybody is consistent with, look, I want to go there. I want to win games. I want to win a title. but I want to have an impact. This is bigger than basketball. And I think they are very sensitive to the fact of, we're going to have a lot of eyes on us, and there's going to be a lot of people watching us every single night. The NBA has gone already to the steps of, they're going to paint Black Lives Matter on the court. We know that's going to happen. There's talks of allowing the players to put some form of social messaging on their jerseys, maybe in place of their names on the back. And those are things that are kind of interesting to think through as well, what that could look like. But here's where the challenge comes in is, those first few days, it'll be in your face. You'll see it. You'll realize it's far less important, but it's almost like the jersey, the ad patch on the jersey, where you noticed it a lot in the beginning, and then after a week or so, you didn't really notice it and you didn't give it any further thought. That's where it becomes important. Of, we can't have Black Lives Matter posts painted on the court and then just forget about it because that was nice for the first few days to have that messaging out there and have that focus. And I think that's where the NBA and the players are really focused on. Now we're going to do that. That's the kind of visual in-your-face piece. But what do we do to further it? And I think you're going to see things like players be involved in press conferences and roundtables and talks and discussions. Some of the things we're seeing that have been very impactful that they're doing now from home, that now you'll be able to do these in bigger groups where you might be able to bring four or five players in person together and have meaningful conversations. And maybe you do that with some level of fan involvement to help educate and, you know, make all of us better people. And I think that's what they're looking to do, is take this opportunity to make a real big, widespread, large positive impact in their community. And I think they're going to take every advantage of that they can.
Do you know how they're vetting some of these messages that they're deciding to put on jerseys? Because it's one thing to put, you know, Breonna Taylor's name or Ahmaud Arbery's name or George Floyd's name. It's another thing to say free Hong Kong, because we know that there are certain things that that cut a little too close to NBA business.
Yeah, the details have not come out beyond. It sounds like they are not going to do victims' names because they want to be sensitive to not leave someone out. Because that's where you're never going to catch everybody. And that's where I think the general thought of all parties involved was, because we can't get everybody's name, let's be very careful on this and let's, you know, go a different direction. Now, of course, there's going to be guidelines. They're not going to allow any kind of, you know, swear words or curses on there or anything like that. That's not going to be that. There's, you know, many reasons for that. Never mind the broadcast reasons that don't allow for those things. So I think you're going to really see them do, you know, they will vet it pretty heavily. And my guess is, you know, we may have some controversy there where a player says, hey, this is really important to me. This is what I want to say. Now, what you hope is they'll be able to work through it and say, I know that's what you want to say, but can we say it this way instead and still have the same meaning and impact? But it's going to be, you know, very interesting to see how that plays out.
Keith Smith, always terrific stuff. We appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you for having me. You all stay safe, you and yours.
And to you. That is Keith Smith of Yahoo Sports and Real GM. We should hear, as we did from Rob Manfred, representing his sport, Adam Silver, always thoughtful and open and honest, and certainly has a relationship with his players that is different than that of Manfred with his, because the NBA understands that players are more than partners, that they are the assets of the league, and they're aware enough to understand that it is a player-driven league, and they actually have a relationship with their players that reflects that level of partnership. I have a lot of respect for Adam Silver, and he had some long, strong, and honest thoughts about what they know about the restart of the NBA, and more importantly, what they don't know and what could be at risk. So you'll hear from him next on The Score.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress-them-on-the-third-date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Confidence ain't great. My confidence ain't great because you telling me you're going to have, you know, 22 teams full of players follow all the rules? Like, when we have 100% freedom, everybody don't follow all the rules. So, I mean, I don't have much confidence, but hopefully, you know, it'll be handled to a point where, like, we're not putting everybody at risk or in a dangerous position.
I don't know if he's speaking for himself or a teammate or others, but that is Portland Trailblazers star guard Damian Lillard saying he's not particularly confident that players are going to follow protocols. And it just doesn't, you know, we keep using the term bubble, and it's just not. It isn't. Because if Adam Silver's like, yeah, I'll come and go, and we know that the people, you know, changing their sheets and supplying their food, they're not living there. They're going home to these four diseased-riddled counties that Keith Smith was just talking about. And then you're going to have players deciding that maybe they're getting a little stir-crazy and they want to call an Uber and get out of there. I'm not sure how they can police it, what the NBA is going to try to do, but that is... That's an honest assessment from Damian Lillard, who says, yeah, we can't do what we're supposed to do even when we have total freedom. So why are we going to do it now when everything's restricted? Okay, well, good luck to you, sir. Good luck to you. NBA Commissioner Adam Silver was on a Time Magazine podcast, and one of the things that he talked about in general was the overall safety of what we're calling the NBA bubble and whether or not the league can coexist with COVID-19.
I'm pretty confident... largely because, as I said, we're playing on a campus that is confined in that the only way to gain access to that campus is to be part of our protocol where there is regular testing. And if someone were to leave our campus, again, they would need to test and quarantine in order to return to play. So at least in terms of the model, we're protected from the rate of cases in the community, in the broader community. There's no way of knowing where this pandemic is going. And what I think we've concluded is that we simply can't run from it. And that, like so many other industries, we're looking to find the right balance between health and safety on one hand and economic necessity on the other. And what we think is we found what makes sense for the NBA, and that is a safe and responsible way to play.
Which is what? I mean, there's so many extra questions that come out of that as far as what is a safe and responsible way to play. Do you mean literally the way to play the games? I don't think that's really the case. It's just knowing what their thresholds are for attrition, knowing when it's not just okay to keep filling uniforms. If you have one team that's ravaged, can that team be extracted and just say, look, this team is off the schedule and out of competition? And what does that do then to legitimacy here? And he discussed that as well, about what it would take to shut everything down. Would it be a total rate of positive tests, or does it matter who it is? Does it matter if it's LeBron James and James Harden and Giannis Antetokounmpo? Does that matter? Will it be the rate of tests, or will it be star players?
Never full steam ahead, no matter what. I think one thing we're learning about this virus is much is unpredictable. And I think we and our players together with their union, the Players Association, look at the data on a daily basis. And if there were something to change that was outside of the scope of what we're playing for, certainly we would revisit, our plans. I'd also say, I mean, we're testing daily. I mean, we haven't put a precise number on it, but if we were to see a large number of cases and we were to see spread in our community, that would, of course, would be a cause for us to stop as well. If cases are isolated, that's one thing. I think a lot of the determination will be our understanding of how our community became infected. That will be part of our judgment in terms of whether we should continue. But certainly, if we had a lot of cases, we're going to stop. As I said earlier, you cannot run from this virus. I'm absolutely convinced it will be safer on this campus than off this campus, because there aren't many other situations I'm aware of where there's mass testing of asymptomatic employees. So in some ways, this is maybe a model for how other industries can ultimately open. But, I'm only going to say, we will be responsible and we will watch what's happening. But I think the biggest indicator will be if we begin to see a spread within our community.
And I'm trying to think this through about the way players think and all that stuff we were just talking about, the multiple channels that we have going on here. And so much of this is fragile. So much of this is based on the concept of legitimacy. And if you have names that go down, and if you have teams whose opportunities are then scuttled because they lose a star or stars, then the muttering gets around the league. People start saying, LeBron's out, or Paul George, or insert whatever name you want. That once it becomes a question sort of what are we really doing here? Of what does this mean? It's so incredibly fragile. It's almost, I don't want to say doomed. I don't want to say doomed because I don't want to be that guy. But when you really think about the complex nature and the odds of where they're going and what they're doing with the NBA, you can replace a baseball player here, there. You can replace a pitcher. You can replace a guy. And if you start looking at over 60 games, what it even means to be wins over replacement at that level, because that's baseball is just it functions entirely differently. And the significance of one person who's only going to bat four times a game, who's already going to fail more than he succeeds, who can't control when the ball is hit to him. What we love about the NBA is that when the year starts, we know which teams are going to be competing for a championship because they have two great players or more. That's what we love about it. But once you have one team, once somebody, if it's Giannis, if it's LeBron, pick a name, but you know what I'm saying here. When an A-lister is sidelined, and not Alton Lister, he's long sidelined, but when an A-lister is sidelined, everything changes about what's happening there. Everything changes then about this agreement that this is going to be legit. I think Brad Stevens is right. As Keith Smith just told us, that Brad Stevens said this could be one of the more difficult championships to win. And that can be true. But in the eyes of players, do you want to go back and say, yeah, well, that's the one you won when LeBron had to quarantine? That's the one you won when Giannis had to quarantine? That then you start thinking, then all it takes is for players that one time to show up and look at each other and say, what are we doing? Are we really doing this? Because that will be insidious. That's going to kind of creep in on you when it all starts to weigh on you. And then the very, very delicate balance of this commitment to it and this shared commitment starts to unravel a little bit, and these shifting sands on which we've been basing this agreement, this desire, this shared energy to come back and play, especially in an NBA situation when a star player goes down, and then you wonder, okay, well, we could win the championship, and then for the rest of my life they're going to say yeah, but. The moment you start getting those yeah buts is when a team can start questioning, what are we doing? Why am I isolating here? What's the point of all this stuff? And it sounds to me like Adam Silver has some awareness of that. So what about what goes on in the games themselves without fans? And we're not just going to hear the squeaking sneakers and the snap of the rim, but we'll hear them talking to each other, and you may not want to hear what's said on an NBA court all that often, especially with some words that can be often thrown around in ways that now have different ramifications based on everything else that they've been saying about the ongoing sociopolitical upheaval and revolution that's occurring right now. They're going to have to be careful with some words that have been used very casually and often during NBA practices and games. So are the players going to talk, and how is the league going to handle this in American living rooms?
I'm excited for the potential of trash talk, which is this hidden part of the game being broadcast and getting a little more insight into that. Are you in support of fans hearing more trash talk on the court?
We'll see. I mean, I think that comes with potential for additional miking. I mean, I think there's got to be some limits on the language. I think often players, they understand when they're on the floor, they're saying certain things to each other because it's so loud in the arena. They know a lot of it's not being picked up. I mean, they may have to adapt their language a little bit, knowing that what they say will likely be picked up by microphones. And in all seriousness, we may need to put a little bit of a delay on some of our. Those are all issues that we're going to work through.
Adam Silver on the Time Magazine podcast. He knows, trust me, that dude knows the kind of stuff that gets said during these games. And they're going to have to be real careful where the microphones are. And when he says delay, I don't know if he means like old fashioned, like when the NBA finals, when I was a kid, would be played in the middle of the day and then they'd show them at 10 o'clock at night on that kind of tape delay. He may just mean very slight broadcast delay to try to remove some things and have somebody listening very attentively to what is being said on the floor. Some texts are rolling in as well. 847 texter says, Dan, the more you talk about this, the more I'm glad the Chicago Bulls are not in it. Well, I'm just glad we don't have to watch Bulls basketball at this point. That I think really is the silver lining of all of this, is that we're not having too much Jim Boylan-led Bulls basketball foist upon us. And 630 Matt in Naperville says, I'm wondering if Disney has asked its employees if they'd be willing to be quarantined with the players, and how many employees would they need to make that happen? No, they don't want to have their employees in their properties staying on site. That doesn't sound like the case to me. And Keith Smith, who's really, really wired in to what's going on at Disney, being a former Disney executive, that certainly doesn't sound like that's the case. And by the way, I had several people via Twitter and on text asking about the report yesterday from a national reporter on another station saying that he believes that the Bulls are going to retain Jim Boylan simply for financial reasons because they don't want to pay two coaches. I have not heard that from anybody that I talked to. And I did the same, almost pass out on the floor when I read that as well. That does not sound like something that I think could happen or would happen, that would be the impediment. And were it to be, he's one of the lowest paid coaches in the league. This isn't Fred Hoiberg money we're talking about here. This is Jim Boylan money. It's only like $1.6 million. If that were to be the case, that's the actual reason they wouldn't go out and hire a new coach after consulting with players, after talking about how they're going to be player-driven and player-focused and players first, they say, yeah, well, we can't afford to bring in a coach that embodies all that, who's actually, you know, has a brain in his head. If that were to be true, then I'm out. I'm done. Then you have scuttled any of all of the trust that's built up for Arturis Karnišovas and Mark Eversley and Michael Reinsdorf and anything that we have given them, on which we've given them the benefit of the doubt that this team is about to be run correctly. If any part of that organization, because of money, or because of any other reason, frankly, let alone the money, I don't care, he's making $10 million a year, you got to get rid of the guy if you want to be what you say you're going to be, that you're going to bring punch clock doofus back? Really?
I don't make that kind of money to give it away.
That's true. That's fine. Well, you're going to bring back punch clock guy. The guy that says, well, I worked in a car factory, so we're going to all pretend like we work in a car factory. So punch your time card. It's going to rain in this mamma jamma before I'm punching a damn time card if I'm an NBA player. Come on now.
We got bulls across our chest.
Okay, that's don't torture me, Jordan. Please don't. I don't need this aggravation right now. But if that were to be true, and it can't be true, I'm not allowing for that to be true. Because if it is, I'm done. I'm donezo. I'm throwing up deuces, and I will talk to you about the Bulls and this plan some other time. Because that had better not be the case. We have the Midday Midway coming up, and there are so many things that I have been meaning to get to. I have something good about the year 2020. Believe it or not, I actually have something good about the year that's happening that is a good thing. I also have a Winnie the Pooh story come to life, and I had a realization of just, It took me years to realize I hate Winnie the Pooh and always have. It's just something just cloying and saccharine about the whole thing. You just want to take a flamethrower to all of them. Christopher Robin and everybody just... That would be immensely satisfying to I'm down for that when the flamethrower edition of A.A. Milne and all his little weirdo people running around without pants on. Sorry. And also, if you have a student going off to college soon, I have a new college major that has been discovered that I wish I could have majored in, because it would have been a whole lot more fun and productive than majoring in English literature with a concentration in American comedy and humor. All that coming up in the Midday Midway, next on The Score.
The first half or the second half, you know, it's they're two equal times.
Now, Midway.
The Midday Midway.
One, two.
Midway, the most important of the year.
Three, four.
The most exciting thing on the Midway.
Five, six, seven, eight.
Our objective is Midway.
9, 10.
You guys gotta meet me halfway out there.
So real, you can almost feel
it. The Midday Midway with Dan Bernstein on The Score.
We did things a little bit out of order from our usual Thursdays so far on this pre-4th of July weekend Thursday edition of the show. We started out right out of the gate by having a conversation with the Cubs' Ian Happ, always pleasurable, and looking forward, I think it's going to be 9:30 is going to be the slot as we get moving and they get into their new workout routine, etc. So that's what we're thinking about going forward there, looking forward to having his continued fun and intelligent presence on this program. We replayed Rob Manfred on the Dan Patrick Show, sounding like he's really just stepping in it, that he's just owning the fact that the owners and the baseball office was not arguing in good faith pursuant to their agreement, and it's a good thing that the players kept alive the possibility of their NLRB grievance in front of an arbitrator, and certainly Ian Happ seemed to agree with that lack of good faith, he, the Cubs union rep. Also, I had a conversation with Keith Smith of Yahoo Sports, who covers the NBA, to talk about the details of the plan and the questions that everybody seems to have about what this season means and what it is. And then hearing from Adam Silver in his appearance on a Time Magazine podcast, it allowed us to hear again how fragile this is and how many different ways this effort to return can be delegitimized and can crumble, and in a way that the players and teams don't seem to share the same desire to continue as it goes on, based on who's available, if stars are unavailable. We also talked about how it's going to broadcast and how it's going to look and sound. I do know that there was an episode of Winnie the Pooh when he got the honey jar stuck on his face, right? Because he was over at Piglet's house, I want to say, and he put his face in the jar. And we read these stories to the kids, and I read it. And it took me a long time to realize how I don't like them. I don't like being around them. I can't quite put my finger on what I found in as I've grown. There's certain things that I like less, and I think I agreed to pretend to like Winnie the Pooh because when you're a kid, you're just supposed to. And I guess I liked Tigger because it was voiced by Paul Winchell, who's kind of awesome. But yeah, there was an episode where he got the jar stuck on his head, and a family out fishing a couple of days ago in a boat in a Wisconsin lake ended up coming to the rescue of a bear swimming with a plastic jug stuck over its head. Brian Hertz said he was fishing with his wife Trisha and son Brady on Marshmiller Lake near Bloomer. I haven't fished Marshmiller Lake, and they noticed what they initially thought to be a floating log was a swimming animal. So we thought it was a black lab in the water and had a jug on its head. Then as we got closer, my wife said, "No, that looks like a bear." And he said the young bear seemed disoriented and likely had its vision obscured by the large plastic jar on his head. You think? I guess that would obscure vision. Why couldn't he see? Jar on head. And his wife filmed the video as her husband attempted to pull the jug from the bear's head. The first attempt failed when his hand slipped from the wet jug, but on the second attempt, he was able to pull it free, allowing the bear to swim away unencumbered. He said, "Once I got it off, you could really tell the difference because it could get proper air at that point, and it seemed like it revived quite a bit." That's pretty ballsy to actually go do that. It obviously is the right thing to do, and certainly if it's not like a full size adult mama bear or like a, you know, a brown bear, you know, a Kodiak there swimming, they could just eat your head. It's like, oh, thanks for taking the jug off my head, and now I'm going to eat you. Maybe they felt that it was because it was in the water, it couldn't get at them, but that's a pretty nice thing to do. Any of us who fish, especially up in Canada, have had our moments around bear. And I remember one day it was pouring rain, and we were on Mary's Lake up in the Caribou Provincial Park, and it was time for shore lunch, and we had our walleye, and we're hungry, and we're going to our favorite spot over by the falls on Mary's Lake there, right near the border of Manitoba. And I look, and there's a guy, like apparently somebody had gotten to our lunch site first, and there's a guy, and I said, there's a guy wearing black rain gear, because a lot of us had black, you know, like industrial, like the good rain gear, the Gore-Tex stuff. And I said, why is that guy putting his face in the fire pit? And then the guy stood up on his hind legs. I'm like, yeah, that's a bear. And we're not eating there. We're not bringing all of these walleye on a stringer and throwing them on that rock, because that's not a dude. That's no dude. That was a bear. And that meant we'll eat somewhere else. I said it was a college major. It's actually, I lied. It's a master's degree that one can get. But tell me how the level of cool or not on this. A Japanese man has become the first person in the world to hold a master's degree in ninja studies after completing a graduate course that involved learning basic martial arts and how to stealthily climb mountains. This is from CNN. Jinichi Mitsuhashi, 45, spent 2 years studying the history, traditions, and fighting techniques of ninjas, the mysterious covert agents of feudal Japan at the country's Mie University. Known for their secrecy and high levels of skill, ninjas were masters of espionage, sabotage, assassination, and guerrilla warfare dating back to at least the 14th century. Yet, Mitsuhashi said ninjas were also independent farmers. And he moved to the mountainous province of Iga, 220 miles from the Japanese capital of Tokyo, to better understand how they lived. I didn't know this. I didn't know that ninjas were like, are they stealth farmers? They harvest by throwing stars at their wheat. He said Iga is where ninja used to live. The climate of this area created the very nature of ninja. So Mitsuhashi grows his own rice and vegetables in Iga, where he runs a local inn. He teaches martial arts and ninjutsu, the art of the ninja, at his own dojo. The master's degree course started in 2018, a year after Mie University established the International Ninja Research Center in Iga, the first in the world dedicated to ninja studies. Apart from history, students also learn traditional fighting and survival skills, basic martial arts, and how to traverse mountainous areas while remaining undetected. And ninja studies professor Yuji Yamada said Mitsuhashi was a dedicated student, said he literally devotes his life to ninja, and Mitsuhashi now wants to pursue a doctoral degree in ninja studies. And he said the course had taught him about the present as well as the past. He said living independently for your own survival and prosperity is important for modern Japan. The world for each of us is not global, but local. He declares the era for globalism to be over. Now that's way cooler than like sociology, isn't it? Like, if you do you declare yourself a ninja, then like are you a ninja? Like, do you list that as your occupation on like a loan application? Or you go to the bank, what do you do? Yeah, I'm a ninja. Seriously? Yeah. No, legit. Total ninja.
I think you just drop a smoke bomb in it. They ask you what you do, and you just, you know, drop the smoke bomb and leave, and they know. You don't actually say it.
You can't say it. Like, if you're a ninja, it's like lame to actually identify yourself publicly as a ninja, because that's kind of the whole point. That people don't know until they're dead, or that they're something's been stolen from them, or the secret plans have disappeared.
It amazes me that, you know, when you're a kid, you're like, what do you want to be when you grow up? Everyone's like, oh, you know, an astronaut or a fireman or whatever. Why don't more people choose ninja?
Maybe it doesn't pay
like
that well.
Awesome job.
Yeah, but the farming sounds like a bitch. Like,
yeah,
don't you?
That's what makes you a good ninja. Because it gives
you
all that
meditation
and alone time.
Oh, as you're actually farming your own rice and vegetables, if that's what centers you and allows you to use your blowgun or throw your throwing star properly.
I think so. That's when I, after I cut the lawn, I always feel a little bit more like a ninja.
I have throwing stars, by the way. When I was a kid, I forgot where I got them. It was some like it was some O'Hare Expo or something, and we just saw them. And my cousin and I bought up a bunch of throwing stars, and we used to use them on a dartboard. And we'd have a regular dartboard, but instead of throwing darts in the basement, it was like up against the drywall. There's probably some stuck in there at my parents' house still to this day. It was so much fun. And then at my cousin's bedroom, one of his walls was entirely corkboard. So because he would tack things up there. He would put up like, okay, you know, he'd cut out like newspaper. But mine was too. In my bedroom, it had a burlap covered wall that was designed to be used as like a total bulletin board, football cards and things that I would cut out about like the 1980 U.S. Olympic hockey team. And I would put all those on my wall, and it could be a constantly changing thing. But that the corkboard wall in my cousin's room for throwing star wars, that was fun.
I would say when we get back to the office to bring your ninja throwing stars to work, but okay, maybe don't do that. Maybe don't.
Well, you just told me to. Well, which
could
is
be arrested for that, I would imagine.
You think? Would that get flagged by security? Sure, you're not allowed. But wait a second. No. I'm a ninja. I'm allowed. I have a card that allows me as a literal card carrying ninja because I got my degree from Mie University.
I'll bring my nunchucks, and you can throw the stars at me. I'll see if I can deflect them with my nunchucks.
I have the rubber covered nunchucks. They call them rubachucks. They're like practice nunchucks, and you could do all the Bruce Lee stuff, and it doesn't hurt.
Well, until you hit yourself in the nuts. It doesn't matter if it's rubber or wood.
Yeah.
Either way, you're going down.
And I've done that.
Of course. Of course you have.
Can I give you the good news about 2020? Can I give you this thing?
But go ahead.
No, there is. I promise you. I promise you, you'll agree.
All right.
Creator Mike Judge is going to oversee the restart of Beavis and Butthead. Beavis and Butthead is coming back. Two new seasons and spinoffs at Comedy Central. And as it is said here, as only the Hollywood Reporter says, Comedy Central is summoning the Great Cornholio.
The what Viacom, I loved most about that show was them watching the videos and commenting. I wonder if that there's not really
all
music
it.
Videos anymore.
No, they might be commenting on the news.
Oh,
from what some of the rumors are, it would be like memes, internet videos, TikToks, etc. Says the Viacom CBS owned cable network is reviving Beavis and Butthead with series creator Mike Judge returning to relaunch and reimagine the franchise as part of a sizable deal that includes a 2-season order, plans for additional spin-offs and specials. Judge will return as the show's central driving force. He will write, produce, and voice over both the iconic characters. The new incarnation of Beavis and Butthead will enter a whole new Generation Z world with meta themes that are said to be relatable to both new fans who may be unfamiliar with the original series and old. So I am down. I am excited for this because there is a Twitter account called Out of Context Beavis and Butthead. I don't know if you follow it.
No.
It's great. It's like random 20-second snippets of out of context Beavis and Butthead. And my son's like sat and watched it for 2 hours and then spent the rest of the day going, fire.
We started watching Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure with Addie. And, mm-hmm. and her only takeaway so far was they say dude a lot. Yes, that's the joke.
Right, that's
she doesn't
the
really
bit.
Get the whole thing, but she's entertained.
Well, the point is, I first showed Jason the Great Cornholio when he was like 5 or 6. And that became that he didn't really understand the rest of the Beavis and Butthead stuff, but that he had down. And that he would pull his shirt over his head when he was really little and run into the room and go, I am Cornholio, I need TP. Are you threatening me? So that was a really important part of his development. And now we can take it up another level. That's the Midday Midway. And as promised, as we get into our weekend, we are going to bring to you a grill master in his own right. And not just the grill. You want to talk cast iron pan. You want to talk sauteing. You want to talk everything from fish and shrimp to goat and ox and beef and sausages. Shane Reardon, who is the man behind the multi-platform empire that is Shane's Meat, is entering the studio to be a part of Shane's Meat Live. If you have questions, if you have concerns, if you need advice, if you're having people over, if you're bringing something to someone's house, or you just want to grill up a big piece of fatty animal protein for yourself, we are here for you. Shane is here for you. People have loved this, so we're going to do it again. SML, Shane's Meat Live, 312-644-6767. Be a part of our first bank of callers as we do that next on The Score.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly!